Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
What's going on, everybody? So glad that you're joining us for another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. On this journey, it's really fun because I get to put together some interesting content, interesting guests. And in doing this show, one of the things I did, if you're familiar with the show that I had before called the Authentic Persuasion Show, originally called the Sales Experience Podcast, is looking through that list of guests that I've had on that show that are also applicable when we talk about call centers, when we talk about sales and sales leadership. And so very excited to have a past guest on the previous show, Adam Chickman from Active Prospect, on the show with me today. It's going to be fun. Now, he is the vice president of sales of Active Prospect. And when I had him on the previous show, the previous series, episode 358, make sure to check that out. There will be a link in the show notes if you want to go check out that episode. The fun thing is that when we talked, and that came out in December of 2020, he had been in a leadership role for about a year. He had made the move in March of that year, 2020, to Austin so that he could be closer to his team to work in the office. And then the pandemic hit, which meant he was then working remote in a new city where he had no idea what he was doing and still not around his team. And so I know obviously a lot has changed, and so excited to talk about call centers, the trends, everything going on. Adam, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thank you, Jason. It's great to be here, and it's great to be back live on air with you. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. So update everybody, and I'm curious, is since December, since we recorded for the last show and pandemic restrictions hopefully lifting, you know, safely, where you guys are at in Austin, Texas, have you been back in the office? Have you met with the team? Have you guys gotten into some, you know, previous in-person rhythm?
Yeah, well, funny you ask about have we met with the team. We actually have our very first offsite for the sales team coming up in just 2 days here out in Austin, Texas. So I was just meeting with our director of sales last night, planning the final touches for that. And we're really excited, especially after wrapping up Q2. It's going to be a great opportunity to really kick off the second half of the year as a team. But with restrictions lifting, we have been getting back out on the road. Obviously, it was great seeing you just 2 weeks ago at an industry impact event out here in Austin. So it's been great being able to have those in-person meetings that we had to take about 14 to 15 months off of. So it feels like the world is getting back to normal again.
Yeah, and there's that interesting kind of tipping point. I know a lot of people are not struggling, but they're looking at both sides, which is, okay, in an industry or in a role that is primarily face-to-face or primarily going to events, conferences, trade shows, sponsoring events, being like the title sponsor, and then, you know, having that presence to not having that for the period of time that we had, and then it being available again. You know, it's interesting to see companies who are like, yeah, we don't need to do that, or companies who are like, yes, please, let's do it. And yeah, it was great. One of the things I love that I've been doing recently in the past few months, and we're recording this early July, so people understand kind of a timeframe for the event, but is taking these kind of virtual remote relationships like you and I have did that podcast before. And then, like you mentioned a couple weeks ago, actually meeting in person, which is such a fun transition to go from virtual to in person. And those events were great. The Leads Council Industry Impact events. And yeah, it was very cool meeting you there as well.
Agreed. No, it was great finally getting to meet you in person. And I think one of the things that we've noticed, we were all surprised at how productive we were able to be in 2020 in spite of the pandemic and not being able to have those face-to-face interactions. We were also surprised at how prevalent Zoom became versus previously most of our virtual meetings would happen via phone. And we found that you're able to have a much more productive meeting on a Zoom call, and most people actually turn their cameras on. So for a second there, we almost forgot just how impactful in-person events and in-person meetings are. But now that we've been traveling for about the last 6 weeks and seeing just how much more gets accomplished when you're there in person and how much more trust you're able to build, it's just been awesome getting back on the road. It feels like old times again.
Yeah. And that was fascinating because I was wondering as the pandemic restrictions went on for a while, if people would just get used to not needing to go to events, not needing to go to a conference, realize they can get some value from it or from Zoom, video, you know, phone calls, doing all that stuff remote. But it is so much different in these last few months of getting back to events and meeting people in person, how quickly that builds relationships and trust, like you said. So yeah, it's we'll see when as events go on and they get bigger, and if you know people are returning in mass. Just from a company standpoint, I know some companies that are still not sending people out because they realize they can still be productive. So a couple of things I want to focus on in our conversation today for the people that are listening that are running call centers or leading sales teams is you have two parts. This is why I love these kind of conversations. Two parts of your business life, if you will. You have the internal management and leadership of your team, right? Which we talked a lot about in that previous episode, which was fascinating, especially as a new-ish leader and everything you had learned. And so part of the conversation I want to have today is around that. Part of it also is the sales, the business development, the things that you're doing to grow the client base for active prospect for your company. And so you have that dual role, right? You're not just managing a team, you are also selling. And so let's start with that part. And I want to know what you're seeing as far as trends go with the call center community. And call center, just, you know, my standard caveat, could be 5 people on the telephones inside sales. It could be 1,000 people, whatever that looks like. But what are the trends that you're seeing for the companies that are successful right now in telesales?
Absolutely. And I should also probably clarify that, you know, our sales team, we are predominantly focused on outside sales. So that kind of gets back to the point you brought up of in-person meetings. But our software, being a consent-based marketing platform, we're really focused on helping call centers make what we call consent-based marketing the best channel for customer acquisition. So with that, we work with a lot of different call centers. And what we're seeing is the call centers that are really embracing new technologies and getting deep into data insights, adhering to those new industry best practices. Those are the ones that are really succeeding right now and able to hit that kind of hockey stick growth. So that's really our goal when working with different call centers is helping them implement the new technologies, be able to take advantage of new insights that are available to them in a productive way so that they could continue to hit cost per sale metrics, make sure that they're doing it in a safe way, avoiding litigation, and then also making sure that they're scaling. So that's really where we're helping these different companies.
So if you're talking about consent-based marketing, right, which means that somebody gave their approval to be contacted, hopefully explicitly for that offer or by that company, right? What's the other mode if it's not consent-based? Is that just, you know, getting lists and dialing numbers and just spray and pray?
Yeah, absolutely. It could be. So we define consent-based marketing as the practice of only contacting consumers who have given their express written consent to be contacted about a product or service like yours. We think that leads to a better relationship with the consumer. If that's really the goal of marketing and sales is to build a long-term relationship that's going to result in a high LTV, it's best to start that off by honoring the consumer's privacy and honoring their ability to choose, do I actually want to receive communication about a product or service like yours? The inverse of that, of course, could be any form of spam or just getting a list of consumers, a string of PII, and kind of smile and dial, hoping that you, as a numbers game, you come into contact with somebody who's interested in a service or product like yours.
What do you think is some of the barriers that keep companies from wanting to go all in on consent-based marketing, lead gen, purchasing, you know, consent-based data, for example?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there are a lot of valid concerns. So I'll start with why, when done properly, consent-based marketing could be so advantageous, and then kind of back into some of the challenges. You know, when thinking about only contacting consumers who've given their express written consent, it hopefully will lead to better relationships with your customers, but also lower acquisition cost. If you're focusing sales and marketing dollars on only paying for contact with consumers who said, "Yes, Jason, I want to receive contact about a product that you're selling," those should convert at a higher rate. It should also lead to happier call centers if your agents are only having conversations with people that are actually interested in a service like yours. That's going to lead to happier call center reps and then better retention as a result. The challenge with consent-based marketing, when you're paying for a lead, so somebody who's, say, filled out a form on a website saying that, "I want to receive information about auto insurance," it's hard to know for certain, if you're not the one who's generated that lead, is this consumer actually interested in auto insurance, or did they fill out a form looking for a free iPad? Did they fill out this form for auto insurance 2 seconds ago or 2 months ago? Is this a professional litigator whose sole purpose and their day job is only filling out forms so that they'll get calls from call centers and then threaten a lawsuit under the TCPA? So there's a lot of challenges around, is this a legitimate lead? Am I going to be able to contact this consumer without having to worry about getting sued? And if I do contact this consumer, is it somebody that's actually interested in my product or service, or did I just shell out anywhere from 20 cents all the way up to over $100, depending on what vertical or what industry you're buying leads in, only to find out that this person isn't really interested? So what we're seeing, the companies that are really succeeding here are the companies that are using real-time insights to be able to do things like verify intent, or verify, did this consumer actually give consent, to be able to verify, is this a real person and a legitimate lead? Is their contact information valid? So when you augment the lead with all of these different types of insights, that's when you know, and you could buy with confidence, that this lead is actually the consumer that you want to be getting in touch with. It's actually somebody who has high intention to buy a product like yours. And you can verify that it's not somebody who's currently a customer that's already working with you, because there's nothing worse than spending money on a lead only to find out they're a current customer. Actually, let me take that back. There are some things worse, such as buying a lead to find out it's a professional litigator who wants right. to sue you. But all of those, all in addition to potential lawsuit, amount to spending money on marketing that isn't going to result in a customer. So the short answer to your question, the companies that are really finding success are those companies that are using the newer technologies to make sure in real time they know, is this a lead that I want to actually purchase and has a legitimate chance of converting into a customer?
Yeah, I love that breakdown. And one part that stands out too, is it being filled out by a person, right? Not fraudulently or not a fake lead, with real information that can be contacted, that can be used, and it's going to work. And it's interesting because over the last couple of years, I've had conversations with various service providers, you know, your company being one of them, where I had not realized in the years past when I used to run sales teams internally, where the data that was being bought and the leads that were being purchased, if they weren't a warm transfer where Bob was on the phone and this was Bob, there was so many times where my sales team would call somebody and they wouldn't close the deal. And I would ask them, "Hey, what happened?" "Well, that was Bob Smith, but he said he never filled out a form and he wasn't interested in anything." And I think back to all the times where I literally thought and or told that rep that I just figured they were weak, or they came across as a telemarketer and Bob Smith just put up those walls and didn't want another call from somebody. And it turns out, as I've dove into this, and you know, the technology that's out there is showing that there's a big percentage of people who their information is being used to fill out forms and it's not actually them. And I love some of the tools that you have with Active Prospect, which is the trusted form, which is recording, for anyone who's not familiar with it, is that it is recording what's going on when they're filling out that form. And it can detect if it's a real person or not, right? If it's a bot that's flying through it in ultra fast speed, that's not what a human would do. And I love, because, you know, now all of a sudden you can feel safe and secure, feeling like you can buy that more expensive consent data or leads, because there's also that fraud part that's removed, right? Is that what you're seeing a lot of?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think whether it's B2B sales or B2C sales, one of the most common complaints any sales manager is going to get from their team is that the leads are bad. For anyone who's ever watched Glengarry Glen Ross, you know, the entire movie was based around these salespeople who were saying, if I could only get good leads, I could finally hit my number. So that is a legitimate complaint. And especially when you're buying third-party leads, meaning buying leads from marketing partners who generate them on sites that you do not own and operate, it is scary thinking, is this somebody who actually filled out a form saying, yes, I'm interested in home insurance or interested in home security? So part of what we do is, as you mentioned with our Trusted Form product, we're able to verify what happened on the form and when it happened. So we're able to remove that information asymmetry that takes place when you're buying a lead from a third party, and you want to be able to scale and acquire leads from third parties, so not just your own and operated sites. But in doing that, you no longer have all of the information that you would have if you filled out that, if somebody filled out a form on your own site. So some of those things that you don't know typically when you're buying a lead from a third party include, when was it filled out? What was advertised on the form? Was it filled out by an actual person or a bot? We're able to pull all of these different signals so that we could tell you when and where that lead was filled out, what was advertised on the form, and then by looking at things such as how long did they spend on the form, and were they clicking or tabbing between fields, et cetera, we could give you a pretty good indicator of if that lead was fraudulent or not. And when paired with a fraud detection service like a Forensic or an Anura, you could really have a high degree of confidence that you're only buying legitimate traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so amazing. The other part that was really fascinating, I actually talked to one of your data scientists in one of the cities of the events that we mentioned earlier. And one of the things he was telling me is that what he looks at and is parsing out from the data is also how well certain leads convert based on how the form is filled out. So did somebody put in their information? Did they have to change their phone number because they put in the wrong one? Did they take them a long time to type? Did they have typos? They had to go back and forth. Like the ability to fill out the form and then how that correlates to a closing percentage was some fascinating stuff where, you know, not used to that. Used to, you know, back in the day, sending out direct mail and you get a phone call and then you just hope for the best, right? With each phone call versus the kind of stuff that's available now with technology.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been one of the most interesting things for me, and to have a front row view into what different types of data are people leveraging and how are they leveraging it to improve conversion rates has really continued to get more and more sophisticated. And we work with customers at, you know, across the entire spectrum. So some of the companies that we're working with aren't augmenting their leads or appending real-time insights at all. So for those companies, they could get massive gains simply by appending something like a phone validation to verify, is this phone number legitimate and will I be able to contact the lead? Others who are already doing that can continue to get more and more incremental gains in conversion rate by doing things like appending data points, lead age, when was this lead actually submitted? And knowing that, am I likely to be the first company to contact that lead because it was submitted just in the last 2 seconds? Or is it likely that this lead's already been contacted by one of my competitors because it's 2 days old? Or sometimes in a shared lead environment, even 2 minutes old is going to cut your conversion rate in half. And then to the point that you brought up about looking at things like, did they delete something on the form? Some of our most sophisticated buyers who are already pulling data or pulling insights around the consumer profile, contactability, the lead event, so when and where it was filled out, as well as their relationship with the lead, they're getting more and more advanced and more granular looking at things like, did this consumer type in every field or did they use autofill? And they're able to see correlations between if somebody just filled out the form manually versus if they've used autofill that correlate to how likely that lead is to convert. And then they make real-time decisions from there. So it's definitely been really interesting to see how that's continued to evolve. And I really enjoy our part in the process with helping companies decide what data points do you need to be appending and what kind of decisions do you make based off of that.
Hey, it's Jason here. We'll be right back to the podcast in a moment. But first, are you ready to help your inside sales team close more deals? In my experience, there's a certain percentage of your team that acts more like order takers than sales professionals. The first step to creating a scalable sales team is to equip your reps with the right mindset and proven strategies to transform them into quota breakers. To build a team of authentic persuaders that will crush their goals, email Jason at cutterconsultinggroup.com or go to www.cutterconsultinggroup.com. In your experience so far, why do you see or hear that companies, you know, the call centers you talk to or deal with, aren't augmenting, aren't enhancing the leads or the data that they're getting? Any reasons that people are saying why they just don't?
Yeah, I mean, cost is always going to be part of it. I think it usually comes down to they just aren't aware that these types of technologies and data services exist. Or they're aware, but they're concerned about the cost because depending on the data service, you know, it could cost anywhere from a penny to 20, 30 cents to append certain data points. So that's where we really come in and helping understand what kind of lift in conversion are you likely to see from each of these different data points? How is it going to help you avoid wasting anywhere from 10 to 20% of your entire budget on leads that don't convert? Because on average across our customer base, we see that by appending additional data points, we're able to help people identify up to 20% of leads that they would have otherwise purchased, but just have no shot at conversion. So that's a 20% savings right there off the top. And then as people understand these different, the economics behind different types of data appends and how they could actually help them avoid wasting money on media or increase in conversion rates, that's when we start to see that people start embracing these different services and technologies.
Got it. Makes sense. It usually comes down to either that awareness or that ROI conversation, right? What makes sense? And the companies I've seen that are successful with their lead buying and conversion game is where they're looking at the value of the lead, not the cost. Right? Because if you're buying a lead that's more expensive, but it's a higher quality lead and all the stuff that we've been talking about, then is it worth it to buy less leads at $10 a piece or more leads at $1 a piece? Right? And what is that doing to your organization, to your staff, to the number of calls being made, to the downtime, whatnot? Are you seeing anything? This is regarding your customers. So not talking about your internal team yet and your sales. You seeing any trends or any changes over the last few years with how the consumers, so your clients' consumers, B2C or B2B, how they've changed as a buyer? Do you have any insight to that, or have you seen that, or have any ideas and thoughts around it?
Yeah, well, I think one of the major trends, and this is coming across in a lot of the legislation, when you look at like TCPA, GDPR, CCPA, they just expect and demand a lot more privacy and control over their data, how it's being shared, who it's being shared with, and when they're being contacted and by whom. I also just wanted to touch on, the last point that you made about a lot of companies who are looking at the value of the lead and how that compares to conversion. One of the trends that we've been seeing is the proliferation of real-time bidding or pin post in a lead ecosystem, which is an auction-based model for buying leads. Similar to the way that digital display advertising started embracing real-time bidding and programmatic buys. We're seeing that in the lead space as well. The idea being that there's no such thing as a good lead or a bad lead. There's leads that are priced right and leads that aren't. So if your cost per sale target is $100, why do you care if you're buying a $1 lead that converts at 1% or a $10 lead that converts at 10%? What our customers who are most successful are realizing is that there is such thing as a bad lead. If that person is a professional litigator, that is a bad lead. If that lead has an invalid phone number, that is a bad lead. So even taking away the cost of the lead when thinking about things like call center efficiency and what's the cost of handing off leads to your high paid call center agents or your sales team that have no chance at converting. The companies that are realizing the overall cost when taking operational cost into account, those are the companies that are retaining their sales teams at higher rates, continuing to increase conversion rates, and avoiding litigation that could be, you know, something a game changer in a negative way for you. So that's just one of the trends that we're seeing.
So talking about your clients, let's say a call center wants to put in some kind of technology like what we're talking about, right? And they want to be able to track this information. They want to buy higher quality. Looking at the whole picture, looking at the holistic sales operation, because I'm thinking, okay, this sounds great. Let's get this tool, or let's get enhanced data, or let's get something like this. What else do you see that call centers really need to think about or put in place to support that kind of tool or data or initiative? Like either other tools, other trainings, other things, right? Because it's not just enough to buy this, let's say just buy this fancy thing and then just have it, you know, be unsuccessful. So what are the other parts around it in the whole ecosystem of the sales op that a call center would want to have in place?
Yeah, great question. So you do need to take that holistic approach, because you could use a platform like Active Prospect that'll help make sure you're only acquiring the leads that are most likely to convert. But if you don't have a contact strategy in place and you're buying these high quality leads, but taking an old fashioned approach, say fast finger dialing, or you're not doing things like leveraging an omni-channel phone call and SMS strategy, you're just not going to be competing at the level you need to efficiently convert these leads. So depending on, you know, the vertical, and we really split out our customers looking at direct to consumer companies. That's like retail CPG companies that are buying leads to feed email marketing campaigns versus what we call our considered purchase division. So those are verticals that have a call center and they're buying leads to feed a sales team. So a much different approach, but I'll focus on the considered purchase verticals for now. We always advocate that you absolutely have to have a dialer in place. If you're fast finger dialing, especially if you're in a competitive lead environment, you're just not going to be the first to get in contact with that lead. And speed to lead, there, as you know, lots of studies show that the longer you wait to contact a lead, the lower your conversion rate. SMS platforms, we've been seeing a lot of SMS platforms enter the market, and companies that are taking advantage of these platforms are doing really well. One of the keys there is making sure that it's omni-channel. So you don't want a text being sent to a consumer that doesn't reference the fact that you just called them, or even worse, you just got in contact with them. And then you're going to have an SMS going out saying, hey, let's have a conversation. So making sure that each interaction references the previous interaction, and even gives a heads up on the subsequent interaction that's coming, has been really efficient. And then also the need for a CRM or lead management system. We still see a lot of call centers that don't have an LMS or CRM in place, and it just becomes really hard to effectively manage your leads and make sure that you're getting the appropriate amount of touch points in, so you're fully maximizing conversion for each one of those.
Got it. I love that list. So before we talk about the internal sales leadership and what you're doing, you know, with your team and your focus, I know that you have a very consultative sales approach. I mean, we've talked several times in the past, obviously had you on the show, met in person. I know what your sales style is. Outside of the list that you just gave of, hey, if you buy this tool, make sure you have these other things in place. I know that when you see a call center operation, that there's probably other things you want to give them some advice so they can just succeed. Is there anything these days, let's say 2021, that jumps out, which is non-lead, non-consent data, non-anything, where you're just like, yeah, this is the one common thing I'm telling people outside of the list that you just gave?
Oh, the one common thing outside of that list. You know, that's a tough one. You know, I think outside of technology, it's really embracing third-party leads if you're looking to scale. And, you know, to getting back to the beginning of this conversation, some of the fears around consent-based marketing and specifically acquiring leads from partners, so leads that you aren't generating on your own. We just see customers who only want to work first-party leads just face that scale challenge. So that's something that, you know, a lot of people have tried in the past and they've struggled with it for some of the reasons that we laid out. But that's where a platform that allows you to verify authenticity, verify consent and intent is really helpful in making sure that you're able to scale in a safe and a cost-effective way.
Got it. That's awesome. So let's talk about the internal sales team and you as a sales leader there at Active Prospect. What is some of the successes that you've had in this year, 2021, right? So far through the first half, given this remote work from home, distributed workforce, and also this transition to hybrid, where maybe some days you have people in the office, other days you don't. What's been some success from you as a leader in the organization?
Yeah, well, let's see, it's July 6th here. So just 5-6 days ago, we wrapped up our largest quarter from a new bookings perspective in 17-year history. So that was obviously a very exciting success. But looking at the question around hybrid models, in-person, remote, I think one of the biggest successes is just being able to meet with the team in person now and get on site and looking at the way that we're able to build trust with especially these larger enterprise customers. So thinking back on 2020, we saw a lot of success and we didn't really see conversion rates fall when looking at prospects that we already had ongoing conversations with. And we've probably met with them 2 or 3 times in person already. The trust was largely there. When entering conversations for the first time with people in the remote environment, that was 2020, we'd have great conversations, but it was just hard to build the same level of trust without ever getting to meet them in person. So now as we're starting to get on the road again, we're starting to see a lot of these conversations accelerate. And especially, you know, one of our goals is to really continue focusing up market where we have lots of enterprise customers already, but really focusing on that Fortune 500. And we're seeing those conversations just progress so much faster by being able to go meet with them in their office. So that's probably been the most exciting piece over these last 3 to 6 weeks. And that's probably going to be the largest focus for us looking to the second half of the year.
What do you see as the biggest challenge for you as a sales leader the rest of this year, maybe going into 2022?
Yeah, I think focus. So we thinking about especially my first time as a sales leader started in the fall of 2019. And then just 3-4 months in, the pandemic hit. The pandemic brought a lot of challenges for sure. But one of the blessings in disguise, which silver linings, if you will, was that everyone was stuck inside and there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities for distractions. And now that the world's opening back up again, people are excited to go outside again. People are excited to have these wonderful lives, which we absolutely want to encourage. But with that, especially as people are just starting to go on vacation again, just starting to have all these distractions, and we really dove into this remote first culture, making sure that we still maintain that focus as all of these new distractions that weren't present for all of 2020 come back. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. A healthy balance of encouraging the team to be on the road, take vacation, you know, take personal time, while also making sure that we're able to stay on top of every opportunity and close out quarter strong. So that's just kind of my initial reaction to that question.
Yeah, it makes total sense because I can see that in a normal environment, which is where we're going back to, expecting people to work all the time, expecting people to be on the road all the time, you know, at some point it's too much, right? Like you've got to let people have their downtime. During the pandemic, when everyone's basically working remote, they can't go anywhere, which is essentially what you're referencing, then everyone's more focused, right? And not just overworking or working excessive hours, but there's you know, little distractions as far as like outside movement. Internally, obviously, there's a lot of people parenting, teaching, you know, kids at home and those kind of things, you know, occupying them. But I could see where that's, you know, as things open up. I will say this week in sending emails, I've gotten a lot of out of office replies from people who are on vacation. And it's weird. Now that you mention it, it's weird to see that many come back because for the last, let's say, 15 months, that wasn't a thing, right? Wasn't a response.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, one of the things we did last year, we ended our fiscal year 8 days early, actually, so that we didn't have our end of quarter, end of year in between Christmas and New Year's, so that we would avoid, if people are on vacation, trying to get that contract across the line when people are, you know, in the Bahamas somewhere. Undecided yet if we're going to do the same this year, but I think this year it'll probably be more applicable because even though we gave everyone the time off, not that many people were actually able to take advantage of the vacation. Right. This year, you know, I would anticipate, especially come the holidays, as people continue to get vaccinated, you're going to see a lot of people going on vacation. And thanks Q4, I would anticipate is going to be a lot of out of office days for, prospects and employees between Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. So that's going to be something we'll all have to be mindful of.
So I know that we've covered a bunch of things. Is there anything that comes to mind as like a lesson you've learned as a sales leader with your own team or about yourself since the conversation we had in December? So not even remembering what we talked about, just you in December versus you now as a sales leader.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, the biggest shift since we had that conversation in December, we've actually promoted a director of sales so that now I'm one level further removed from the actual front lines. And for me personally, that's been probably the biggest challenge because I love being in those conversations so much. So being able to at times take a back seat and provide the support without being as hands-on has been a struggle. But I think the biggest learning is that if you hire right, both the individual contributors and your management team, it's a lot easier. And personally, you know, could not be more pleased with the performance of our management team and individual contributors. So that's made it a lot easier when you have that confidence that people are going to have great consultative conversations with their customers, that if they need that support, it's there. So I think really just the lesson that I have reiterated is it's so important that you hire the right team. And as you grow an org, making sure that you get your management hires right is critical.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you said too, which I've seen a lot of people face. I know that I face this many times in organizations where, like for yourself, you were in sales and then you're promoted to a leader and then instantly handed a team. And, you know, you're their peers one moment and then all of a sudden you're their manager the next. And then now you're even removed. And that side that made people successful in sales, that part that they enjoy, right? There's the hunters that just like to go out and get the kill. And then there's the people actually just, you know, on a different version of that is the ones that love interacting with customers, love helping salespeople close deals, love, you know, just, you know, helping companies transform their clients. And to be removed from that, it's a tough one. That's a tough transition. You know, a lot of times you're just missing that piece that, you know, you did to get you to where you are. Now it's a totally different hat. It's a totally different focus.
Yeah. And I think that's probably just what I just shared is probably just a slightly different way of saying the number one lesson in sales management, I believe I shared last time I was on your show, which is actually something I learned when I was 20 years old, going into my senior year of college and coaching a 12U baseball team, which is you put a great team on the field and when they win, you look good. So just making sure that you really put a great team on the field, put the right folks in the right spots and then support them. And that's going to continue to be my focus.
Yeah, I love it. And one other lesson to throw in there too is where I see a lot of people in sales management or leadership or hiring roles, they tend to think that everyone is like themselves. They want to hire a lot of people like themselves, put those people in place where what you want is the best people in the role and the people who are really good at what they're good at, not just clones of the leader or the manager who, you know, thinks that they know what it takes. So I appreciate the fact that you guys have a very diverse team of salespeople and, you know, from different perspectives, experiences, backgrounds, you know, and points of view. So that's awesome. Well, Adam, thank you for coming on the show, for being a crossover guest from the previous podcast over to this one. I know for people who are interested, they can go to activeprospect.com to find out more information about Active Prospect. Also lots of content, lots of information on there, just in general regarding leads, consent, things like that. How about if people want to get a hold of you and chat with you more, find out more, you know, about the stuff that we talked about sales and leadership and or, you know, client inquiries, people who want to know more about Active Prospect?
Yeah, absolutely. My email is easy. It's just adam@activeprospect.com. So please don't be shy reaching out. In case you can't tell, I really enjoy chatting all things consent-based marketing, lead generation, call centers, sales management. So please, you know, feel free to reach out. I'll also gladly introduce you to anyone on the team. So hope to be talking with a lot of folks soon.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it. And I appreciate you coming on the show and taking time to talk to everyone today.
Thank you, Jason. Had a great time chatting with you.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.